Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB Trades Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. In recent years, more and more research has been undertaken to help us understand the different financial lives of men and women. It sounds funny, but that traditional path to wealth and happiness has always assumed a heterosexual couple, marrying young, buying a home, paying it off, wife staying home to rear children, and then you retire together using joint savings that you've earned over several decades of secure employment. Now, we all have come to understand that that trajectory is really far from the norm these days, and therefore people's outcomes can be really, really different from that also throughout people's lives and into retirement. Today, I'm joined by Bianca Hartshue-Hazelman of Financy, publisher of the Women's Financial Index, to talk about wealth and investing considerations that affect women. Bianca, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So, Bianca, we first met a long time ago when you were a journalist with the Financial Review. So you've got a really strong background in finance and investments. Can you tell me a bit about the work you do now and how you came to start doing that work?
Yeah. So I, as you mentioned, I'm the founder of the Women's Index, but before that, and I started a blog after leaving the Fin Review following the birth of my second daughter. So I started this blog called Financy. It's a women's money blog, and the reason I started it is because I felt there was a gap in the amount of information, the level of information that was out there that could really be helping women around money. I was seeing a lot of conversations increasingly come up online through social media and the like, and I just felt there was something that I had learned through being at the Fin Review, a place that I loved working and writing for a gender-neutral audience, but there was something I could take from that and give to women, essentially. So that's what I did through the blog. And then through the blog and through my interviews, I started asking the question, are women progressing? Are women progressing financially? No one could really answer that for me with substance. And as a bit of a data journalist, I was hunting for that. So I just decided to create an index that actually allowed you to track some kind of sense of progress. And the way we do that, which I suppose we'll go into, is by looking at a woman's working life and putting it all into one easy to understand number to give women, media, policymakers, just a measurement that tells us whether or not we're doing well or whether or not we're going backwards.
It's really powerful. So your story, you've come from a background that, so I personally came from a background where I didn't think gender had any impact at all on my financial decisions, and certainly not on my financial situation up until I had children. Always planning to have kids. And so, you know, career-wise and in terms of saving and investing, all those sorts of things, didn't consider my gender at all. Seemed irrelevant. And then I had kids and it was an extraordinary shock to go, oh my God, I'm not going to have any income for quite a while. Then I'm going to probably go back to work in a part-time capacity, all those sorts of things. So I got this really dramatic education in how different it is simply because I was going to be the primary caregiver for our kids. Tell me a bit about your experience and how that drove some of your views on this.
Yeah, it's amazing that, isn't it, that as women, you see it in the future, but it's not really until it happens that all of a sudden you're thrust into this decision-making and the impacts of those decision-makings, and you want to be a mum. Most of us want to be that stay-at-home mum to some extent, but we also have grown up, a lot of women, you know, in their 30s, 40s now, have grown up with these careers. So we know really no difference compared to when we look at, you know, my mother, perhaps your mother, where socially it was a lot different. But when you're raising a nation of women who are having careers, the shock that comes later in life can be quite profound. For me, it was then, not so much. Well, it was hilarious when I think of it, because my first daughter, I had her already booked in for childcare at 3 months, mm-hmm. about 3 different childcare centres. So I was really adamant that I was returning back full steam. I did end up returning back full time at 6 months, but I was able to do that at Fairfax by working flexibly from home and in the office. So that was fantastic. But at the same time, I was on this journey where I was having children. So suddenly all these different things started coming up and I had to make decisions around my money and the family's income that I hadn't had to make before. And really, I probably should have been more aware of it because my mum was a single mum. I grew up with her struggling to provide for us financially. So I feel like those money issues were always bubbling away for me, but it wasn't really until, like you said, that I became a mother that I really understood that I had to make some changes, or there were ultimatums at play. And I think that's these things cropping up are why we need to be talking earlier to women about money.
It's quite powerful, isn't it? Because the decision to have children in my situation anyway was very much a joint one, right? It wasn't just my decision. My husband was part of that decision, most definitely. And yet I felt very strongly that all of the consequences fell to me. So it's a joint decision, but his life didn't change and my life changed dramatically. And, you know, fortunate to be in a relationship where we made the decisions together. And also I was very conscientious about ensuring that we saved and that the finances were managed carefully through my being off work and that kind of stuff. But I imagine in different relationships, if you were not conscientious about it, or you weren't confident about money, you had not thought about it, or you hadn't made an active decision to get pregnant, to have a child, to be in a relationship, you know, if any of those things happened by accident, you could find yourself coming really unstuck. And that was one of the things that really surprised me. It was like, I feel on top of this. I'm not super thrilled about the impact to me personally, some of it, but at least I'm organized and I know what I'm doing and I'm well informed because of my role. And I looked around and thought, God, so many people must really, really struggle with this if they're less fortunate than I am.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, families do struggle. And a lot of people that I speak to, particularly in the city areas, say that they need that dual income in order to survive, to make ends meet, to provide the kind of life they want for their family. So the pressure is already there from the moment you have a child to return to the workforce, if you can in some capacity. Mm. If it's not on you directly, it's a shared kind of responsibility there. But, you know, it's really tough. And I suppose that the working family and social pressures don't make it any easier.
And I think housing costs are probably the one that really stand out there, that housing is so expensive in this country.
Yeah. And childcare.
And childcare is so expensive in this country that, you know, people are dependent on that dual income. So one of the points I was going to make is we talk about women's finances, but, you know, when I looked at our situation, even though I personally was disproportionately affected, it affects both of us because we do things jointly, you know, men in couples need to care about this as well, for the simple reason that one person without an income means half your income. It doesn't just mean one person without an income.
Yeah, I think there is a real, when we talk about women's money issues, or I kind of blog about women's money matters, it is the inequality or the disadvantage that affects women, it affects both men and women. Mm. And it's a matter of, when we talk as women about our money situation or the impact of having kids or just having a career back, you could be looking after your elderly mother. There's other things at play here. When we talk about that, we really need to be involving the partner if we have one in our lives, or the support network if we have that. But if I come back to the partner, be talking to them about the impact on our financial situation. I often hear women talk about the cost of childcare offsetting their wage. Is it worth me returning to work because I'm really not going to earn that much more? It bugs me in a way, and I get it. I get why they do it, because we take on that. I think whether we know it or not, we actually take on that, but we perhaps shouldn't be. We need to be looking at that picture of the family income and then how it looks, and also not discounting our superannuation that comes into play if we return to work.
So this was the question. You mentioned policymakers earlier. So one of the things that's becoming increasingly apparent, and it's really powerful that we're having the conversation now, because 15 years ago we definitely weren't, that structurally, the legislature and the finance industry are not particularly well supportive, well designed to support women, because the way their lives unfold is different, right? So the assumption is perfect, unbroken working life from the age of 20 to 60, and then you retire with a lump sum, and isn't that marvellous? It's, you know, it just doesn't reflect how women live. And to the point about men, some men also, broken working lives are actually much more common across the spectrum now. But what are your thoughts about the sort of structure of the industry and the structure of super and so on?
Yeah, I see a huge opportunity there to be applying a gender lens. And I know some people will go, there are people who either see the need for a gender lens, or they don't like us having to split things into gender. But we need, I believe we need a gender lens, because as you pointed out, we have a system where the majority of men, nearly double the number of men, actually more than that, we've got over 8 million men in full-time work, we've got about 3.1 million women in full-time work, we have a system where the statistics reflect and the structures reflect the averages, and the averages are by and large skewed towards that male dominance. So it is not reflecting, and this is why the Women's Index was created, is to drill into the gender stats where no one else was really looking at those gender stats. So we need systems that, from taxation to superannuation in particular, that actually delve into the differences and how they affect women, and then be restructuring the way money is paid, money is taxed, and how it affects women. Not so it, this one brush approach doesn't really work, and it doesn't reflect the way modern Australian families are operating and the penalties that are in place for a man or a woman to take time out of the workforce.
That point that you make is really powerful. Like the system is not designed to support people with different types of working lives. It kind of supports one model.
Yeah.
This is a traditional model. I got a job when I was 20, and then I worked till I was 60. I retired, probably 67 now. I retired, and then happy days, it's all fine. And we know that people's lives in general don't follow that model anymore, but women's lives in particular don't follow that model, because they have to take time off to have children. And if men take time off to have children or become carers or do anything else, they're going to be similarly affected. The other one that's interesting to me is the age pension, because it assumes you own a home.
Yeah.
And that's not always true.
No. And if you don't, I mean, we know that statistically women who are single and elderly are more likely to be in poverty. A lot of the time, women don't even get captured in those statistics, because they're either couch surfing, they're more likely to couch surf, or just, you know, live where they kind of can, because of the reality that that age pension is just, you know, it's not a lot, is it, when you consider that most people are having to rent, and the rising cost of rents and all different factors coming into play gets a little bit depressing. So, we need to probably brighten things up a bit and focusing so much on the downside of things. But that is another reason why superannuation, and I'm happy to see, is increasingly being offered on paid parental leave and unpaid parental leave by companies, you know, including NAB, for 1 to 2 year periods, and that superannuation guarantee is now increasingly getting above that 9.5% as we move towards that bigger target later on.
I think one thing that is nice, and I will say this for NAB, because I was a happy beneficiary of it, was that they pay superannuation the entire time you're on parental leave for up to 12 months, even though you're not getting an income that whole period. So your maternity leave is definitely not 12 months worth.
Yeah.
You will get superannuation over that period. So it feels from a super perspective like you haven't taken a break. The only thing that does matter is if you are in part-time work, you're getting it on a part-time salary, not a full-time salary. But it's still really important. I think, to your point, like, it's fabulous that employers are starting to recognise this, and they're making steps to ensure that women are not disadvantaged in that situation.
Yeah, and that alone is going to just, it's going to do two things, I believe. It's going to either help to narrow that superannuation savings gap that affects women by about, you know, depending on what data you look at, 30 to 40%, you know, women have 30 to 40% less saved than men come retirement age. So it should help to narrow that. But it could also, the problem with averages is it tends to mask those extremes. So we could see another gap created within the gap where those women who are not lucky enough to be in a company that is progressively minded when it comes to super, they might be like myself where I'm having to, I pay myself super every quarter, or they, you know, cash flow might not be there, they might not be able to do that. People are working differently today. So we could have a divide opening up increasingly even more if the government does not make the forward step of making that superannuation a bit more sensitive to the family needs of well, that primarily affect women.
Yeah, and the complex working lives people have now too. Like this idea of straight line growth is, you know.
The casualisation of the workforce.
Yeah, it's just anomalous in today's society, really. Yeah. So because you're absolutely right, it's really easy to get depressed about this stuff. And I'd much rather talk about the constructive stuff, because if I use my own experience, because I never thought about being disadvantaged, I wasn't, right? Very privileged. Got a great education, very much looked after all the way through, and have had a really happy working life and all of those things. All the decisions I made when I was young set me up really well for when we had kids. We weren't in a situation where we were desperate for money or any of those things, and our children are very lucky also. But there are plenty of things that women can do and families can do, so partners can do to make this a much less challenging situation to face into. What are your thoughts about some of the things people should start with?
You mean in terms of men helping women more, or what do you mean there?
I think there's a whole variety of different things. One is what you can do for yourself when you're young and single, when you are just young, you know, so when you're starting out.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, one of the things that we found through the Women's Index is that we are seeing financial progress for women. And we have seen that over the past financial year, which is a good thing, despite a bit of a pullback in the pace of that growth at the start of this year. But what's been driving the progress for women has been better educational decisions, particularly from younger women. So we're seeing an alignment in women choosing courses that are more likely to align with industries that are higher paying.
Oh, nice.
That's encouraging. So, you know, this might be engineering, IT related. So we are seeing that all those, you know, those campaigns around getting women into tech, girls into tech, appear to be working. That is a good thing. We're also seeing a slow improvement, dare I say, on corporate boards, or that tends to go back and forth. But overall, it is improving. We're seeing a record number of women in the workforce and getting paid a bit better. The gender pay gap on average is improving, although it's still not as good as where it was back in 2006, so go figure that one.
And I shouldn't laugh. That's not funny at all. That's really depressing. But anyway.
It is a little bit. But overall, you know, and the superannuation gap has actually narrowed a little bit. So overall, we are seeing some improvement in the economic progress of women. So we're seeing improvement in those financial gains because women are taking advantage of the opportunities that are available. There are more opportunities out there now. There's more awareness about those opportunities. There's more women's groups. You just have to get online, and social media has largely facilitated that. If you have a question, you put it out there, people will answer. So there's just that accessibility is changing the way women can thrive. And more women are taking advantage of that. And this is a really good thing. And the more we see that, and more we see these conversations open up around wealth building, around, you know, I've got this problem with X, how do I, you know, increase cash flow? How do I do this kind of thing at a social level, at a low cost, no cost social level to begin with, I believe is really important. Then we will increase engagement at the other end of town where women really, you know, want to engage a financial advisor or all that kind of thing as well. So I see that as all as being really progressive on so many levels, and it all comes back to seizing those opportunities that are available, tapping into that education and making the most with what you've got.
I think You're absolutely right, and the opportunity is available. One thing that, from my personal experience, is that senior executives are much more conscious about this kind of thing than they were certainly when my career started. Mm-hmm. So I've been working in finance my whole career, not particularly significant representation of women when I started. Very low, let's call it very low. And yet now, you know, when mentors make themselves available, they will be very conscious not just to go to a young man who looks like themselves 30 years ago, if you know what I mean. It's really easy to mentor someone who looks like you. You can feel how they're going to come through the ranks, but they'll go, I will look for someone who might not look like me. They might be wearing a skirt instead of a pair of trousers, but they have the same characteristics, and that's the sort of person I want to mentor now. So a lot of senior executives are much more conscious of not showing gender bias and all those sorts of stuff, which is kind of cool. The other thing that I love to talk about when I talk to young women is compounding, right? A couple of good decisions when you're really young can just have such a significant influence later on. The best piece of advice I ever got was from a youngish woman. She was younger than I was at the time, and I was contemplating buying a house, but I was in a relationship, a very new relationship, and I was like, yeah, should I buy a house? Or given that the man I was in a relationship with also owned a house, I was like, it's ridiculous to buy another house. If we end up together, it's ridiculous. And this person said, buy your own house. Because if the relationship doesn't work out, you've got a house.
Yeah.
And if the relationship does work out, you've got a house. Mm. As it turns out, I married the person in question. And we live in the house that I bought.
Yeah.
Which I wouldn't have anticipated at the time, but that was how it worked out. But it was incredible advice. Someone just going, do you know what? Either way, it's a win if you make steps on your own behalf.
Yes, yeah. And those are the kind of decisions that young women can make, especially when we know that, there's so many more women, probably 200,000 more women on average going through tertiary studies. So they're trying they're setting themselves up for careers. We're seeing more and more women want to set themselves up for careers. So those women are coming out with the potential to earn money. Mm. I'm not going to say earn great money because that all depends on where these women are going. But, you know, they're setting themselves up with skills. So this is a really good thing. So when they're making money, we need to be reaching these women about, well, what can you be doing with it? And compounding is such a powerful tool. Mm. I was at a talk recently where I was being asked, you know, I've got $10,000. Where can I be investing this money? There's a real appetite there. There's conversations there. And it reminds me of, you know, as I was growing up, my father would want to have conversations around business. And they were always kind of with my mum, but I'd hear and I'd listen and that kind of thing. But my husband, his father would always have business conversations with the boys. And I feel like the more you kind of can change those dynamics in the home, where we're having career decisions, business decisions in the home, individual wealth building conversations in the home, even with your daughters, your sons, about, you know, when you buy that house, when you, you know, just start saving that little amount, that kind of thing. It changes your thinking as you grow up, so you don't get to a point where I think you're alluding to, where you're like, you're waiting for that person to then give you the permission to buy that house together.
Yeah.
You don't need that permission anymore.
I think that's really powerful. So one of the challenges is, you know, many young women, they're facing a much brighter future than their mothers did, perhaps. You know, we're much more astute about these things now. Institutions, perhaps not policymakers, but definitely institutions and people are much more conscious. Couples are much more thoughtful about this. So people are much more thoughtful about it and they understand it better. Women don't always end up better off as a result of it, but we're making strides. You have an index to show we're making some strides. For older women, though, who haven't had the benefit of a lot of the changes to infrastructure and so on that are coming into effect, what are the sorts of challenges they face and what can they do about it?
I think for older women, particularly those who haven't had the full benefit of superannuation or have lacked that help when it comes to education and, you know, the impact of divorce, or, you know, what do you do with your money? Have you invested your money? Have you spent all your money? Have you paid your superannuation to, you know, pay off credit card debt, which unfortunately I hear all too often? There are some real challenges there, you know, because of a lack of awareness and education and help. How do we help these women? We need to try and and reach them. But we also need to have them wanting that information to receive that as well. It's such a tough one. I come into contact with a lot of women who have just, are still today, older women, looking for that male partner to get them out of that dilemma that they're in, that, to get them out of homelessness in many cases. Now, these are more extreme situations. I don't want to put a downer on everything, and, you know, but there are people out there who still are thinking that way because they were raised that way. You know, you grow up, you meet a man, that's the way it kind of rolls for you. But, you know, I just don't feel that that is, I think that's really kind of sad. But what we can do is, you know, there are increasingly more support networks available to help older women get into work, to stay at work. There are incentives for employers to pay to hire older women. Employment really is a key, because when you have a job, you get money. When you have money, you have choices.
Yeah.
And that is so critical to try and help people with that, and to educate them on the need to be working for longer.
Yeah.
Longer than perhaps they ever would have wanted. I remember my grandparents, my pa retired at 60. Today, my mother will work maybe till she's 70.
Yeah.
Easy at this rate. And she owns her own home. But she needs to keep bringing in that income.
Yeah.
You know, there are things that she wants, ways she wants to live. She hasn't had the full benefit of superannuation. And apparently you need a cool $500,000 to retire comfortably. There's that need to keep working and to just have that bit of reality check about what your future can be if you don't, and be talking as much as you can to your support network if you have them. If you don't, try and seek the support to make better decisions for yourself if you can.
I think you make an excellent point about support networks. We are very privileged in this day and age of, you know, everything is available if you can look for it in terms of the internet and so on. There are financial counsellors, so it's a free service where you can go and see them if you're in financial strife, and they're not like financial planners, right? They don't get paid.
Some people don't know about that.
Yeah. Financial counsellors, you know, it's a very basic service, and that you go in there and they will tell you how to pay off debt. If you are in real financial trouble with debt, they will negotiate with creditors on your behalf, but, you know, they're not getting any weird payoffs to do that or anything like that. It's a public service, and they do this really great functional role to help people who are in strife. Beyond that, there's lots of brilliant education out there. I think obviously if you are not well educated about finance and financial products, and particularly if you don't have a lot of money, you can stay in safe products, term deposits, cash accounts, that kind of stuff, without having to worry about taking any risk. Just avoid all the get rich quick stuff, all the fancy you know, if you borrow this much money, we can guarantee you this return. You can avoid all of that and stay with really clear, simple products that, you know, you would have had access to 50 years ago, just with a paper account rather than everything online the way it is now. You know, so people do have access to a lot more than they had previously. It's just availing yourself of it. I think for a lot of women who are a bit older, the other thing that's absolutely essential is ensuring you don't believe it is your obligation to provide for everyone in your life. Some of the worst situations I have seen is older women who've worked very, very hard all the way through their lives in family businesses, particularly farming families and so on, where they've both run the home and the farm, whether, you know, it was all of the farm or parts of it, and then they get to retirement age and their sons or the children step in. And suddenly that asset they've been working their whole lives belongs to somebody else, and they have no assets. That sort of thing, I think it's absolutely essential you understand. You are not obligated to give up your assets for your kids. If your kids are in their 30s or 40s, they'll be fine. And you should not be depriving yourself of a future, a safe, happy future, particularly if you're 60, right? You've got 30 years to live in order to provide for them.
I think it's what's so key about what you're saying is educating yourself about your own financial situation, what money you've got coming in, what money potentially could be coming in. There might be, you might be able to, you know, if you need money, can you rent a room? Do you know, different ideas like that. Can you sell things? What money's coming in, what money's going out? What does your bank statement look like? Who's in control of your bank statement?
Yeah.
Is elderly abuse an issue? Are you being bullied? If you're a lot older, if you're older, you know, if you have a disability, there's all different things going on there. You know, being aware of your own financial situation and not putting that responsibility into someone else's hands is so important. My grandmother still can't use a credit card. I have educated her that it's not really it's more of a tap and go kind of situation today. So she totally missed the credit card. But in terms of using an ATM,
a bad thing, right? Yeah.
But she still puts that responsibility into my grandfather's hands willingly, because that's the way she grew up. She grew up even with him as his wife. So there will come a time that she needs to take responsibility for her own financial decisions if she wants to take greater control of her own financial future. And I think it's so much better to have that sense of independence rather than being dependent. And that's the risk a lot of women run if they put that responsibility into someone else's hands completely.
You're absolutely right. I think one thing that should give women some confidence, I hope, you know, so many women do feel dependent and they feel completely disempowered as a result of decades of handing over their responsibilities to somebody else because they were raised that way. And yet all the data says women actually manage money very well.
Yeah.
Because generally speaking, when times get tough and they're managing the household budget, they are the ones making sure that there is enough to cover the expenses and so on. It's not common that you found men managing all of the household budget. They might invest, do the investing side or some of the other components. But in terms of managing how much we pay for groceries and so on, that was usually the woman's responsibility. So you have these women who are actually very astute about how to manage often small amounts of money, having the confidence to then extend it to more sophisticated
to amplify that.
Things.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. But what is also interesting, and you've probably seen this in some of the research that you come across, is that the data says women are actually pretty good at investing as well. Women tend to make good investing decisions because they're less likely to be overconfident. That seems to be the one that comes through really strongly. Women are less likely to be overconfident, therefore they don't move their money around so much and they don't lose quite so much on transaction costs and
risky moves.
Yeah, silly bets. What we like to call silly bets. Yeah, so quite interesting that women should feel confident and empowered to make good decisions. The data says you're going to be fine, right? You should be fine. But it's educating yourself and having the confidence to do something about it.
Yeah, it's definitely all those things. And also industry has had a tendency to talk to the man when both people front up. So that needs to shift. And I think as more women move into financial services and, you know, different money management fields, that hopefully will shift a little bit. And I think with all the awareness around, you know, your pay gaps, your super gaps, and, you know, just gender diversity in general, that we will see that the people are seeing there's more of a need to, you know, not just talk about his money, the family's money, but let's take a look at some of the issues that are affecting her money and how we can do better there.
Bianca, I love it. You produce some fantastic stuff. Obviously, the index itself is really powerful and important for people to get across. The fact that it's moving in a positive direction is very encouraging. Where can people go to see more of what you're doing?
You can get the quarterly Financy Women's Index by subscribing to financy.com. You'll get it to your inbox every quarter, along with a bunch of other articles that will help you, hopefully, in, you know, from anything to, you know, money management tips to property investing to tax. We write about a whole heap of things and there's a lot of contributors. So that's out monthly, but quarterly you can be assured of getting your women's index and just finding out where you sit. Are you progressing or are you not?
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Wealth. We hope, as always, it's helpful to you as you build and invest your wealth. We always love to hear from you, so if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.